Picture a bloom so exquisitely complex, so breathtakingly beautiful, it seems almost alien. A flower that has quietly dominated nearly every corner of our planet for over 200 million years, evolving into 30,000 known species, more diverse than any other plant family on Earth. This is the orchid, but behind its captivating elegance lies a history far more intricate, more obsessive, and often more perilous than meets the eye. From whispers of ancient hidden powers and forgotten aphrodisiacs to the feverish hunt of Victorian collectors and the dark dealings of a modern illegal trade, the orchid has consistently driven humanity to the brink of obsession, secrecy, and even destruction. I'm Megan Brame, and on this episode of The History of Plants, we'll peel back the delicate petals of the orchid's past, tracing its enigmatic journey through time and culture, uncovering the hidden allure that has captivated civilizations and continues to fuel a desperate fight for its very survival. Part 1, Ancient Roots, Hidden Meanings. So where did its incredible story actually begin? For that, we've got to travel back an astonishing 200 million years, where the first orchids may have originated in Eurasia during the late Cretaceous period. From there, it went on a quiet global conquest, adapting to almost every environment on Earth, from the steamy Amazon rainforests to the frosty Arctic. What's really curious is that most of these plants are epiphytes, meaning they don't grow on soil. Instead, they're not exactly parasitic, but they do cling to other plants, often perching atop trees in the shadowy canopies of tropical forests. It's a testament to its hidden toughness, hinting at the powers people believed it had long ago. The earliest written mention of orchids in the Middle East comes from Assyria, where two clay tablets of recipes found in the royal library of King Ashurbanipal in Nineveh suggest orchids were familiar to the ancient Sumerians as food. But our first clear look at how humans interacted with this ancient bloom comes from ancient Greece. The Greek philosopher Theophrastus, who lived in the 3rd century BCE, called them orchis, a word that literally translates to testicles, which was a nod to the resemblance their underground tubers have. This wasn't just a simple observation or some bad dad joke. It kicked off an association that resulted in some really deep-seated beliefs. The Greeks strongly connected orchids with vitality and fertility, even suggesting that they were an aphrodisiac, often associating orchids with satyrs and their wild excesses. They also believed that if an unborn child's father ate orchid tubers, their size could influence the child's sex. Big tubers for a boy, smaller, softer ones for a girl. More strikingly, in Roman iconography, orchids were depicted far earlier than previously thought, appearing in architectural elements like cornices and ceilings from the 1st century CE, including the external frieze of the famous Areopagus monument in Rome. Here, they seem to symbolize fertility and sexuality. Orchids were a global phenomenon that held significance in many ancient cultures. Settle in, okay, because we've got a lot to cover, so I'm just going to gloss over each briefly. In ancient Germanic folklore and broader European traditions, orchids, particularly species like Orchis mascula, the early purple orchid, were also linked to fertility. Their tubers, mirroring Greek association, were connected to virility and even used concoctions believed to incite desire or determine the sex of a child. This tradition carried through medieval herbals and folk magic, or with witches' potions. Further north, in Russian and Siberian traditions, orchids like Cypripedium calceolarius, also known as the lady slipper orchid, found their place in folk medicine. They were used to treat nervous disorders, acting like a kind of sedative, and for pain relief. Moving south to Africa, which is home to around 494 orchid species, so far, these plants held significant roles in traditional medicine and cultural practices. Various African tribes, including the Zulu community in South Africa, utilized orchids to treat ailments like coughs, diarrhea, madness, and to relieve pain. Beyond medicine, orchids were also used in cultural practices for love charms, fertility promotion, and even as protective charms. Some decoctions were consumed by married couples for fertility or by men to treat impotence, leaking back to that ancient association with vitality. In ancient China, the orchid took on different but just as powerful meanings. Dating back to 2800 BCE, the Chinese were actually among the first to truly understand and document the orchid's medicinal uses. Beyond just being a remedy, the Chinese saw orchids as a symbol of innocence, refinement, and nobility, often given as gifts to wish for many children, a blessing of fertility wrapped in elegance. The famous philosopher Confucius even called Lan the king of fragrant plants, noting, quote, "It never withholds its fragrance even when it is not being appreciated." Ancient India saw extensive use of terrestrial orchids within Ayurvedic medicine and extended across Southeast Asia as well. Often valued as tonics, aphrodisiacs, and for treating various ailments, many native orchid species have had long histories in traditional medicine and spiritual practices in countries like Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia, and the Philippines. Further east still, Japanese culture developed a deep appreciation for orchids, particularly species like Neophenetia falcata. While their primary role here was aesthetic and symbolic, tied to notions of refinement, perseverance, and even samurai culture, their meticulous cultivation highlights yet another facet of human fascination with these flowers. Moving over to the Western Hemisphere, in Native American cultures, particularly those of the Ojibwe, Cherokee, Unamuni, and Penobscot, various species of lady slippers orchids, the Cypripedium species, were revered. They were often called moccasin flowers for their unique shape, and old legends tie their origins to acts of courage or sacrifice. Beyond their beauty, these orchids were highly valued in traditional medicine. Native Americans used them to treat fevers, headaches, menstrual cramps, labor pains, and even as a calming remedy for insomnia and anxiety. The Munamuni and Penobscot, for instance, used the pink lady slippers orchid for its soothing properties. Finally, for the Aztec civilization, orchids were valued not just for their beauty, but also for their raw strength, perhaps due to the perceived strength needed to hold itself upright on the trunks of host plants. The Aztecs linked them directly to great power and vitality. They even crafted a unique elixir called chocolatl by mixing chocolate with vanilla orchids, believing this potent concoction would boost their physical might. And in a remarkable find in Jerusalem, traces of vanillin were discovered in wine jars that were used by the elite before 586 BCE, suggesting an early culinary use of vanilla in the Old World long before its Mesoamerican origins were widely known. Despite orchids having complex histories across many cultures, this was just the start of their story with humanity. A new era was about to begin, one that would turn simple admiration into a feverish, dangerous obsession. Part 2, a Victorian mania. So we've talked about how orchids held diverse, often sacred meanings across many ancient cultures. But as the world moved into the Victorian era in Europe, particularly England, admiration for this flower transformed into something far more intense, almost bordering on a fever. Beginning in the 16th and 17th centuries and surging dramatically in the 19th, wealthy collectors and botanical gardens sponsored traders and explorers to venture deep into the remote jungles of the New World and Southeast Asia. These weren't genteel strolls, they were dangerous expeditions. Many collectors actually died from tropical diseases, accidents, or encounters with hostile wildlife, all in pursuit of these rare and magnificent flowers. The transportation itself was a brutal challenge, with countless delicate orchid plants succumbing to the harsh conditions en route back to Europe. The stakes were incredibly high, fueled by staggering prices a single rare specimen could fetch, making it a trade ripe for desperate measures and sometimes even outright theft. This was the age of orchid mania or orchid delirium, a period defined by an insatiable, sometimes dangerous obsession. The orchid, with its exquisite beauty and rarity, became the ultimate symbol of luxury, wealth, and sophistication among the gentry and royal families. Purple orchids, in particular, became intrinsically linked to royalty, authority, and admiration, turning these blooms into prized possessions to adorn lavish homes. This era was also the height of floriography, a practice that was called the secret language of flowers, where Victorians believed that every bloom carried a hidden message. And for the orchid, its meanings were as complex and captivating as the flower itself. Due to their exotic and rare nature, orchids were often given to convey a message of love or tell a woman she was beautiful. The rarer the orchid, the deeper the love and admiration. White orchids, with their immaculate perfection, symbolized innocence, elegance, and purity. Pink orchids, dainty and graceful, represented femininity, joy, and happiness. Red orchids, as with most red blooms, vibrated with passion and desire, while yellow orchids conveyed joy and friendship. This silent, intricate language further fueled the orchid's mystique, allowing its beauty to speak volumes in a society often constrained by rigid decorum. However, this feverish orchid delirium couldn't last forever. The very intensity of the hunt contributed to its decline. Overcollection in the wild began to deplete natural habitats, making future expeditions less fruitful and more costly. To make matters worse, early collectors often misunderstood the specific needs of these delicate plants, leading to high mortality rates, even among the orchids that made it back to Europe, earning England the unfortunate nickname, the Graveyard of Orchids. As decades passed, increased botanical knowledge and the development of more sophisticated greenhouse technologies slowly made cultivation from seed possible, eventually reducing the desperate reliance on wild-caught specimens. The mystique of extreme rarity began to give way to wider, though still specialized, availability. Despite the obstacles, the study of orchids maintained a steady course, captivating many notable individuals around the time, including the legendary Charles Darwin. In January 1862, Darwin received a specimen of Angraecum sesquipedale, a remarkable orchid with an unusually long spur. Intrigued, Darwin made a bold prediction. He hypothesized that such a flower could only be pollinated by a moth with an equally long proboscis, suggesting a co-evolutionary partnership. 41 years later, Darwin's prediction proved true when a subspecies of African hawk moth, Xanthopan morganii predicta, was confirmed to be its pollinator. This intricate relationship and the orchid family's tendency to have such specific pollinators made them the perfect subject for Darwin's work on adaptation. Just 5 months after receiving that specimen in May 1862, Darwin published his groundbreaking work, Fertilization of Orchids, detailing the distinct characteristics that enabled their pollination by specific organisms. But even as the initial madness waned for some species, the story of one particular orchid, the beloved Vanilla planifolia, experienced a quiet revolution that would change its fate and hint at the future of global cultivation. Ancient Mesoamerican civilizations, like the Totonac people and even the older Olmecs, had domesticated and used wild vanilla for centuries, primarily as a fragrance, good luck charm, and for flavoring of drinks like the Aztecs' chocolatl. Upon learning about its scent and flavor, the Victorian orchid hunters became enraptured, but they faced a challenge because its global spread was limited by a biological secret. The vanilla orchid, native to Mexico, relies on a specific local bee for pollination, either the Melipona or Eugulosa. Opinions vary. But more importantly, the reliance on one bee meant it couldn't be cultivated elsewhere. It would flower, but couldn't produce the beans that were so critical. So you'd end up with a bunch of admittedly beautiful flowers, but no beans. That is, until 1841. Far away in the Indian Ocean, on the island of Reunion, a 12-year-old enslaved boy named Edmund Albius made a groundbreaking discovery for how to hand-pollinate vanilla flowers. His method involved using a thin stick or blade of grass to lift the rostellum, which is the flap of tissue that a vanilla orchid uses to separate the male and female reproductive organs, the anther and stigma, respectively. Once the rostellum was lifted, he used his thumb to crush or smear sticky pollen from the anther directly onto the stigma, fertilizing the flower. This simple, quick, and low-cost technique was a game changer that completely revolutionized global cultivation. Suddenly, vanilla could be grown successfully in other tropical regions, transforming it from a rare Mexican commodity into a globally available staple. As for Albius, his tale did not get any easier. While he was granted his freedom in 1848, it was due to France outlawing slavery in its colonies. His previous slaver, Ferial Belet-Bilmont, did end up becoming his biggest advocate and fought off claims by others who said they invented the technique first, notably French botanist Jean-Michel Claude Richard. The rest of Albius's life wasn't much easier, and he ended up resorting to a life of theft to make ends meet. He was caught attempting to steal jewelry, and though Belet-Bilmont wrote to the governor requesting clemency, he was sentenced to 10 years in prison, with some saying 5 years of it were of hard labor. Edmund Albius died in 1880 at the age of 51, with his obituary saying, quote, "The very man who at great profit to this colony discovered how to pollinate vanilla flowers has died in the public hospital at Saint-Suzanne. It was a destitute and miserable end." So what happened when these once rare, highly sought after beauties, particularly vanilla, became more widely cultivated? Did their mystery simply fade with their increased availability, or did it take on new, perhaps darker forms of obsession and exploitation? Part 3, potions, poisons, and paradoxes. We've seen the orchid as a symbol of love, of life, of luxury, driving an empire to mania, but this bloom of beauty held another side. It was like a secret utility or a potent chemistry that made it far more than just a pretty face. For centuries, across continents, orchids were harvested not just for their exquisite appearances, but for their surprising power and healing, sustenance, and perhaps even more unsettling applications. The story of orchids as a medicine is incredibly ancient. In ancient China, some of the earliest descriptions of orchids for therapeutic uses, as we said, dates back to around 2800 BCE. The Shennongbang Saojing, an early Chinese pharmacopoeia, mentioned specific orchid species like Flotilla striata, Dendrobium nobile, and Gastrodia alata. These were routine used for general health and to treat everything from lung and kidney diseases to stomach problems and coughs. This deep traditional knowledge didn't stay in China. It extended across ancient India's Ayurvedic preparations and general traditional medicine globally, where over 94 species of orchids were utilized for a vast array of ailments: tuberculosis, paralysis, gastrointestinal issues, chest pains, syphilis, arthritis, cholera, even cancers. Some species acted as sedatives, others for pain reduction or as general tonics. Even the Greeks and Romans, while perhaps better known for their fertility associations, they were still able to document the orchid's medicinal side. Theophrastus, back in the 3rd century BCE, hinted at their use as aphrodisiacs, but later, Pliny the Elder, Petronius, Dioscorides, and Galen all noted their use for increasing or repressing sexual desire, curing mouth sores, or clearing phlegm from the chest. This belief in their influence on sexual health in particular persisted for centuries, with renowned figures all citing them. But what exactly was hidden within these diverse plants that gave them such perceived power? Modern science, acting like a forensic team, has begun to uncover the key chemical compounds. Orchids produce a wide range of secondary metabolites, which are complex substances with physiological, ecological, and pharmacological relevance. Among the most intriguing are over 100 bioactive alkaloids, which are compounds often found in plants with powerful medicinal or even toxic effects that have been isolated and are notorious for their activity on the animal nervous system. Beyond alkaloids, other hidden agents contribute to the orchid's profile. Stilbenes and phenanthrenes like organol and militarine act as phytoalexins, which are compounds produced by plants in response to microbial attacks, giving them antioxidant and antimicrobial properties. Flavonoids and phenolic acids produce strong antioxidant and anti-inflammatory benefits. Even p-hydroxybenzyl alcohol, found in various orchid tissues, exhibit sedative, hypnotic, neuroprotective, and antimicrobial properties too. Some terpenes found in their fragrant flowers have been shown to have antiviral activities, while glucomannan starch and sugars in their tubers justify their use as food across many cultures. These are the chemical fingerprints of utility that so many of our ancestors found, hinting at why these plants were so valued. The section talks about poisons, right? So let me clarify. When we say poisons, it's important to understand most orchid varieties are generally not considered acutely toxic if simply ingested. However, the plant kingdom's secrets are often complex, and the perception of danger can sometimes outpace the science. During the Victorian era, as orchid mania peaked, a new subgenre of horror stories emerged, often featuring killer plants and flowers that could poison or even consume their unsuspecting collectors. Yes, I know we're all thinking of Little Shop of Horrors, but authors like H.G. Wells, in his 1894 short story, The Flowering of the Strange Orchid, captivated readers with tales of exotic blooms that had sinister appetites. Another chilling example is Fred M. White's 1898 The Purple Terror, which featured vampiric orchids. While these are works of fiction, they still reveal a cultural anxiety about the unknown dangers of these imported exotics. But the risk wasn't just in fiction. The presence of of potent alkaloids active on the nervous system inherently carries a risk of severe adverse reactions if misused or taken in high doses. For example, in 2016, the academic journal PNT published a report involving a dendrobium extract derived from an orchid in a performance-enhancing supplement that led to alarming side effects, including psychosis and homicidal features in a user. This highlights the potential for dangerous, even poisonous effects, especially when concentrated extracts are involved, whether intended or not. So the orchid, a plant of breathtaking beauty, also harbored a hidden toolkit and left tangible clues in ancient records, hinting at widespread medicinal and even culinary applications that we are still learning about today. But as we transition from its ancient utility to its modern fate, the paradox of enduring allure becomes starkly clear. A plant that is so loved and so desired that its very survival is now threatened by human hands, which leads to the question, what becomes of a natural treasure when obsession turns into exploitation? Part 4, the shadow trade and conservation's fight. While the feverish orchid delirium may have waned with the Victorians, the intense demand for these living jewels certainly did not. It just evolved. Today, a vast legal trade in wild orchids continues globally, feeding markets for food, traditional medicine, and ornamental purposes. This is no longer just about wealthy hobbyists. It's a multi-million dollar shadow industry that causes immense ecological devastation. The overharvesting is particularly devastating in biodiversity hotspots like Southeast Asia, leading directly to the extinction of species. A tragic example is Kahn's slipper orchid, Paphiopedium kahni. Discovered in 2010 in northern Vietnam, this magnificent species was actually collected to near extinction within only 6 months of its discovery. By 2014 and 2015, it was effectively wiped out in its natural habitat, a direct casualty of insatiable human desire, and now stands as critically endangered on the IUCN Red List, meaning that scientists believe less than 10 mature plants still live in the wild. This passion for rare orchids can quickly escalate into obsession and sometimes spills into infamous criminal activities, even today. Consider the real-life events chronicled in Susan Orlean's acclaimed book, The Orchid Thief. This story is captivating because it details the exploits of John LaRoche, a maverick plant dealer in Florida, and his Native American accomplices who were caught illegally harvesting rare and protected orchids from the Fakuhachi Strand State Preserve. Their primary target was the elusive ghost orchid, Dendrophyllax lindianae, a rare and hauntingly beautiful species found only in specific swamps in Florida and Cuba. LaRoche, driven by a blend of genuine passion for plants and a desire for a quick profit, aimed to clone and sell these legally protected specimens. I don't want to give too much away because Orlean's book is definitely worth the read, but it vividly illustrates just how far people will go, even today, driven by the intense allure and potential profits associated with these plants, highlighting the dark underbelly of the modern orchid trade. So you probably aren't surprised to hear that the fight to protect orchids is a really complex and challenging one. Conservation efforts face immense hurdles due to the sheer number of orchid species, making identification and tracking really difficult, alongside rapidly shifting consumer patterns and a significant lack of ecological knowledge about many traded species. And sadly, plants often receive far less funding and public attention for conservation compared to animals, despite their vital role in ecosystems. Somebody needs to contact Sarah McLachlan, I'm just saying. But not all hope is lost, because the orchid story also includes guardians, dedicated individuals and organizations fighting for its future, international bodies like CITES, the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Flora and Fauna, work to regulate and monitor their commercial trade, which is a crucial step against exploitation. Groups like the Orchid Conservation Alliance, OCA, founded in 2004, actively raise funds to conserve critical land in orchid-rich regions, having already protected nearly 4,600 acres of biodiverse orchid habitats. These are the modern detectives and protectors in the ongoing battle for the orchid's survival. So the history of the orchid is a testament to its remarkable resilience, adaptability, and profound impact on human culture. From its ancient origins and diverse applications to its role as a symbol of luxury and love, it has consistently held a unique position in human consciousness. Its journey, however, continues with a final poignant mystery. Can humanity protect this living enigma from the very desires its beauty ignites? The orchid endures, inspiring fascination and reminding us of the intricate, often paradoxical relationship between ourselves and the natural world. I'm Megan Rame. Thank you for joining me on another episode of The History of Plants. Jump into the commentary episode on Patreon or check out the video version on my YouTube channel, Plantrums. Until next time, greenies, stay curious and don't forget to flourish. Thank you.